This show proudly sponsored by Real American Freestyle Wrestling. Real American Freestyle is the first ever unscripted pro wrestling league created by Hulk Hogan, Chad Bronstein, Israel Martinez, and Eric Bischoff to give elite wrestlers a real shot at professional career. Real American Freestyle is where Olympians, world champions, and NCAA legends come to compete. Not in a cage, not in a script, but on the mat in front of fans around the world. This is real wrestling, reimagined for today. The first event kicks off August 30th in Cleveland, featuring matchups with some of the best wrestlers on the planet. You've never seen wrestling like this. Learn more at realamericanfreestyle.com.
Fox News Radio Studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
And welcome to the Brian Kilmeade Show. I am Mary Walter sitting in for Brian today. So excited to be back. It's been a while. I miss you guys. And we have, wow, let me tell you. These guys have done an incredible job. Pete, Allison, you guys have just packed this show. Coming up at the bottom of this hour, country music star Cole Swindell will be joining us. I am so excited about this. There are so many of his songs that I absolutely love, and my husband is so jealous that I'm going to get to talk to him. And he has a new hit out in honor of Charlie Kirk. So we will be speaking to him about that. Molly Hemingway will be joining us. Reagan Charleston, Nancy Mace, so many great guests coming up on the show. Let's start it off, though, with one of my faves, Lieutenant Colonel Alan West, Dallas County Republican Party Chair, American Constitutional Rights Union Executive Director, and former Florida Congressman. Follow him on X at Alan West. That's A-L-L-E-N West. Alan West, thank you so much for joining me. What a treat to talk to you. How are you? Can you hear me? Hi, there you are. Hello. Hi.
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay.
I'm not hiding.
I thought maybe, oh my gosh, he blew me off. I can't believe it. He says he's going to be there and he doesn't show. But that's not like you at all. So welcome to the show. So great to have you. Of course, we have to start off with the big news, which is a peace in the Middle East. And President Trump coming off of 36 jam-packed hours. That man didn't stop. He was on Air Force One. And he was answering reporters' questions the whole time. One of the things, though, that I want to talk about, I want to go to cut 14. This is President Trump, and I just want you to listen to this on Air Force One. And he was asked about our relationship with Qatar, you know, because they did have the leaders of Hamas. They were harboring them, giving them safe place to stay in Qatar. And he was asked about this, and here's his response.
They were very brave, and their leader, the Emir, was very, very brave. And Qatar should start getting some credit. And you have to understand, they lived in the middle of everything. So they can't just be like, you couldn't do it, I could. Nobody could do it. Say what?
Have they changed their behavior from 2017 when you accused them of funding terrorism?
I don't know. In 2017, I didn't really know them very well. You know, 2017, that was at the very beginning of my my term. As I got to know them, I got to understand them, and I got to realize that they are right in the middle of everything. Other countries are there, but they're an hour and a half away. A big difference.
So I guess the question is, I've always had doubts about Qatar. I don't trust Hamas as far as I can throw them. This, you know, how far did we really get along with this? We have high hopes and we're declaring peace, but this is just step one.
Yeah, you know, it was George Santayana, the Spanish political philosopher, who said those who fail to learn from history are doomed to repeat it. And so this kind of reminds me of 1938 when Sir Neville Chamberlain went over to Munich, Germany, and sat down with Adolf Hitler, and they came up with an agreement called the Munich Accords. And, of course, Neville Chamberlain famously came back, landed at the airport, raised up the document and said, I have this signed document from Herr Hitler saying, and there will be peace in our times. And then, of course, less than a year later, Hitler, you know, initiated his attacks in the Czechoslovakia and Eastern Europe, and he referred to the Munich Accord as a piece of paper. I hope that this can be lasting. I hope that this can be sustained. I think that we have to be somewhat skeptical of Qatar, and let's look at the conditions. Let's look at how things change, because after Iran, Qatar is the number one sponsor of Islamic terrorism, and like you said, the leadership of Hamas stayed there. When Barack Obama released the five senior members of the Taliban, they stayed in Qatar before Joe Biden let them go back to Afghanistan. So the Qataris have a lot to prove to us, as well as the nations there, the Arab and Muslim nations. They've got to step up and they've got to choke off Islamic terrorism in that region.
You know, Hamas is supposed to be stripped of their weapons. They're supposed to lay down their weapons as part of this. Their entire existence is to eradicate Israel. You know, on the classrooms, the walls of the classrooms in Gaza, there is no Israel on the map. The whole thing is Gaza. The whole thing is Palestine. I don't understand how that works. You're a military guy. How do we strip them of their weapons?
You're not going to, not peacefully. You have to do that forcibly. And when you think about Hamas, as you just articulated, Mary, in their charter, Hamas's charter, their raison d'etre, the reason for their existence, is to eradicate the modern state of Israel and also to kill Jews worldwide. That's who they are. And even if you say we have an agreement with Hamas, there are six or seven other Islamic terrorist organizations that operate there in the Gaza Strip, and Palestinian Islamic Jihad being one of them, Al-Quds, Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigade. And let's not forget that the quote-unquote Palestinian Authority is Fatah. They're another Islamic terrorist organization. They just wear better suits. So we have to be very circumspect about what we're talking about. And now comes the real serious issue of, does Hamas change its stripes? Do they, you know, change their spots? You know, a cheetah is still a cheetah, you know, even if you think it's going to change its spots. So I don't think Hamas goes away. And that's going to be the real hurdle here, is to see if they do continue on with this peace agreement to say that we're just going to go away. I don't think they're going to go away. I don't think they want to give up the governing authority that they have in Gaza.
Yeah, I don't. And apparently, you know, we saw videos of the people in Gaza who were shouting Donald Trump, Donald Trump. They want peace because they're tired of living the way that they live, which is horrific, absolutely horrific. But I look at that and I'm like, you put these people in power. You've literally voted them into power, and now they've got power, and they're using it in a very horrific way and using it against those who disagree with them. Do you see any possibility of an uprising maybe from the Palestinian people who are like, no, we don't want to live like this anymore? Or is it just too deeply entrenched and too powerful?
Oh, I don't think that they have the means by which they can foment an uprising. They don't have weapons themselves. And, you know, that's the beauty of us here in America having a Second Amendment. You just can't make us into subjects and subjugate us. You know, Hamas is a brutal entity. You know, all that humanitarian aid, all that food aid that even Israel was giving over into Gaza, guess what? Hamas would take it and force their own people to buy it from them so that they can continue to sustain themselves. So, no. Unless you have a force from outside of that region, and I'd love to see, you know, the UAE, Egypt, and some others come together with not a peacekeeping force, but a peace enforcement organization that will go in there and help to eradicate Hamas and get them out of power and forcibly disarm them.
This is obviously going to take years. It's a 20-point agreement, a 20-step agreement. We're at step one. So we've got a long, long way to go. This is going, I think, far past Donald Trump's second term.
Yes.
Should we wind up with a Democrat as president in 2028, does this continue or is this whole deal blown up?
It's blown up. I mean, let's just look at what happened with Ukraine. When Donald Trump was the president, you know, Russia did not make any incursions into Ukraine, as opposed to when Barack Obama was the president. That's when they took their initial actions and took over Crimea. And then when Joe Biden comes in, they just overrun the place, most of eastern Ukraine, because they saw the weakness of the Biden administration exhibited in Afghanistan. So people are used to just let's wait the Americans out and let's see what happens.
right.
because they know that we operate in election cycles every 2 years, every 4 years. And hopefully we can have a continuum of leadership in the path of a Donald Trump that people will get the understanding that this will continue to be the modus operandi of America.
All right. Coming up, I want to talk to you about this a little bit closer to home and the Democratic Socialists of America and their position on this and MamDami, et cetera. So I want to talk about this infiltrating into the United States. We've got more coming up with Lieutenant Colonel Alan West on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
It's Brian Kilmeade.
Every day. America's first responders stand ready. Firefighters, law enforcement, paramedics, doctors, dispatchers, and people who put themselves on the line for public safety. But keeping them connected in moments of crisis has not been easy. That's why Congress authorized a nationwide network for public safety. Today, that promise is fulfilled through FirstNet. It's the only nationwide network built with and for first responders. So whether it's a big city, rural town, or remote tribal community, FirstNet helps ensure no call for help goes unanswered. It gives first responders priority access, never throttles their communications in the U.S., helping them to connect across agencies when it matters most. This isn't just a network. It's a lifeline, a bipartisan commitment to America's public safety, built to serve those who serve us all. FirstNet is the backbone of our nation's emergency response and will continue to be in the future. FirstNet, built with AT&T. Learn more on firstnet.com/public safety first.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
I'm Mary Walter, in for Brian. We're with Lieutenant Colonel Alan West. He's here joining us on the show. Coming up in about 10 minutes, Cole Swindell, country music star, will be joining us. So, Lieutenant Colonel, you mentioned the Palestinian Authority, and I just briefly wanted to say before I bring it back to the U.S. that, you know, I was in Israel in August. And we did go into the Palestinian-controlled areas of the West Bank. And what they pointed out to us was that they could have been attacked from the east, the west, which is hard for me to get my head around that the West Bank mm-hmm. is in the east part of the country. But they could have attacked from there because there are Palestinian-controlled areas there where even Israelis are not allowed to go without a special pass. And yeah. they did not. They did not attack. So is the Palestinian Authority less of a threat and maybe more likely to cooperate with this?
I think maybe that they are looking at a moment of advantage more than anything else. And if you think about it, you saw how Israel responded with Hezbollah. You saw how Israel responded with Hamas. I don't think that Fatah, being the Palestinian Authority, and Judea and Samaria, that's really the regions that we're talking about, that they wanted to, as we would say down south, get some of that whooping stick.
I love it. All right, let's bring this closer to home. The Democratic Socialists of America condemned the ceasefire because they have to be against anything President Trump is for. They've been screaming about a ceasefire. They've been screaming about peace. They've been screaming about a homeland for the Palestinians, right? And now they're against it. Now, we can laugh at them. But I think their presence is growing in this country. They're becoming accepted by the Democrats, by the official Democrat Party, as an official wing of their party. They may not be doing it. It's, you know, they may not be saying it, but they are nodding their head and accepting them. How much of a threat is this in this country?
Well, they're not just a wing of the Democrat Party. They're the controlling element and aspect of the Democratic Party today. All you have to do is look at, you know, Chuck Schumer and the Schumer shutdown. That's all because of AOC and the pressure that she's putting on him. Looking at who's running for and will be the mayor of New York City, an avowed, pretty much so, a Marxist communist, and he's supported by the Democratic Socialists. So, yes, I think that they are an incredible threat ideologically to the United States of America and without a doubt, to the collapse of the Democrat Party that we used to know as the Democratic Party. I think that, you know, now when you look at the candidates they're putting up, to include the mayor up in Minneapolis, they're going in a completely and totally different direction.
And this is why we're seeing Chuck Schumer, even Hakeem Jeffries, being pushed yeah. out by this group. And I blame Nancy Pelosi, because when the squad came in, They camped out in Nancy Pelosi's outer office to see her. Remember that? And mm-hmm. she let them yes. do it. And I was shocked that she did not slap them down. I thought for sure Nancy was going to get in there. She was going to slap them all right down and put them in their place. And she didn't do it. Is this something that the Democrats want to see? The old guard couldn't usher it in because, you know, for the old guard, that age group, communism, socialism, bad words. Mm-hmm. But they're letting the younger generation do it, and they're okay with it.
The old guard can't stand up to the young revolutionaries. That's what we see happening, and that's been the model of the Marxist movement, you know, ever since Karl Marx and Frederick Engels wrote their book. It has always been about young revolutionaries. You know, of course, this ideology that thrives on college and university campuses, and those are going to be the same people that put someone like Zohran Mamdani into power in New York City. And you look and see what is happening on our college and university campuses. They had a huge anti-Israel rally this past weekend in New York City. While they're there trying to talk about a peace agreement and deal and the release of hostages, they still want to see Israel destroyed. So the Democratic Socialists that are taking over the Democratic Party, very anti-Semitic. That's the reason why you didn't get Josh Shapiro as the vice president running with Kamala Harris, which
right.
could have meant they won. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. I love that she said, yeah, he was, we thought he was the best candidate, but we knew we couldn't win. And I'm sitting here listening to this. So what you're saying is because he's Jewish, Democrats won't vote for him. So Democrats are anti-Semitic is basically what she said out loud.
Yes.
Without
a doubt.
Yeah.
Without a doubt.
It's absolutely incredible. And I want to also, before I run out of time, I want to talk to you about Charlie Kirk. Today would have been his 32nd birthday.
Mm.
And
yeah.
President Trump was, as I said, 36 hours of nonstop. And even on the plane, even on Air Force One, he was talking to the press. He was answering questions and everything. So he could mm-hmm. get back to award Charlie posthumously the Presidential Medal of Freedom. And tell us just a little bit about what this is, the Presidential Medal of Freedom.
It's the highest award for a civilian, American citizen in the United States of America. It is, for us in the military, equivalent to being a recipient of the Medal of Honor. And when I think about Charlie Kirk, a young man that I met when he was 19 years of age, he asked me to be one of the initial board of advisors for Turning Point USA. I watched that kid grow up over the last 12 years, and he was just phenomenal, complete command of issues and knowledge and things of that nature. And it's just sad that the fascists, the real fascists, decided to take away his life because they don't want to have the free exchange of ideas and the freedom of conscience and the freedom of speech.
Yeah, they cannot, and if you've ever tried it on X or any other social media, they cannot handle anything that challenges what they believe to be true. They're emotionally based. And when someone's emotionally based, mm-hmm. they have a hair trigger temper because you're challenging what they feel to be true. They cannot process the facts to the contrary. They just can't do
it. You're right.
Yeah.
New York Senator Daniel Patrick Monahan said, you're entitled to your own opinions, but not your own facts.
Exactly. And he was right. I just want to play something for you here. This is Don Lemon on YouTube, you know, because he's still wandering around the streets asking people questions and getting his head handed to him. And here he is talking to a legal Mexican immigrant on illegal immigration. And it goes just as you would expect it to go.
Mexico right now is doing mass deportations on all the people that stayed illegally because that's how you manage a country. And it's not about hating people, myself as an immigrant. It's just about doing things the right way. As a lot of them have signs that said, no human is illegal. But once you enter the wrong way, doing it the proper way, you're breaking the law.
It's not a crime. You're not breaking the law. I mean, you are breaking the law, but it's not a criminal act.
Those laws are being broken left and right, and people are not being accountable. And it gets to the point where little by little starts growing and growing until it gets to a place where you can no longer live and be safe. In Mexico, they are doing mass deportations, and they're using force. Nothing like you see here in the U.S. They're not pulling you over and checking out, let me see if you're legal to be here. No, they start beating you up and then they question you later.
That's, we're there. That's happening.
Not even close. crossing the border illegally, that's a crime. You don't see it that way, but I do.
I love that he continues to do this and continues to get his head handed to him. It's amazing.
Boy, did she just school him or what? But, you know, again, and now think about it, you know, Jasmine Crockett, who is a member of the United States House of Representatives from right here in Dallas County, she also said that crossing the border is not illegal. They don't even understand the Constitution.
Nope, and they don't like to let facts get in the way of their feelings. Lieutenant Colonel Alan West, always a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining me here on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Thank you, Mary.
Hi, everyone. I'm Brian Kilmeade. It gives me great pleasure to tell you that Simply Safe is now available at 50% off because you're listening to this podcast. So go to simplysafe.com/Brian. Now, why is Simply Safe so perfect? Number one, it's easily put in. Number two, it's unbelievably effective. Number three, they're using AI now to stop the break-in, not just catch the people that are doing it, but to stop them before they infiltrate your life and destroy your personal property. I personally trust these people. This is a game changer. The agents take action while the intruder is still on the outside. They confront the intruder, letting them know they're being watched on camera, and you know they're going to head for the hills because they're going to head right to prison if they don't, and hopefully they still will. There are no long-term contracts. There are no hidden fees. Get this. The U.S. News & World Report, they named them, Simply Safe, the best home security system. There's a 60-day money-back guarantee. So what price can you put on safety? Well, Simply Safe is easy to install. They're always improving the product, and it's affordable. Why can't you be safe? The answer is, of course you can. Go get Simply Safe. Save your 50% by going to simplysafe.com/Brian. Get it.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
In for Brian, it's Mary Walter. How are you? Hope you're having a fantastic day. I am, because I get to speak with Cole Swindell. He is a country music star, and if you don't know the name, you probably know a lot of his songs. Like, if you hear him, you're like, oh, because I did that for my husband last time. I'm like, look who's going to be on with me tomorrow. I'm so excited. And one of his favorite songs, my husband's favorite songs, is Heads Carolina, Tails California. And he redid it to retell the rest of the story. And he has a new song out, though, inspired by Charlie Kirk's widow, Erica. It's a perfect day to be able to speak with him. Cole Swindell, thank you so much for joining me on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Hey, thank you so much for having me. It's an honor to be a small part of it.
Well, like I said, my husband was like, he's so jealous that I get to talk to you today. Can I just very quickly ask you about that song? That song was the original was by Jody Messina.
Oh, yes. She Had Me at Heads Carolina. Yeah, yeah. I remember when that original came out, riding around in my mom's car. Yeah, singing along to it, and then getting to put my own spin on it was pretty crazy.
So was she okay with that when you redid it?
Yeah, I mean, you know, when you're doing a song, like doing something like that, an interpolation, you have to check with the actual songwriters of the song. So we, Tim Nichols and Mark Sanders, who wrote the original Heads Carolina, Tails California, we reached out to them, and we were fully prepared for them to be like, no, you know, we're good. We don't want anybody messing with it. But they were honored that we chose that song to kind of do that with, although I had no idea what the reaction would be like. And then later on, getting to have Jody on the remix of it was amazing. You know, I hope she knows that, you know, I grew up a huge fan, it was just a nod at 90s country and you know, something that she had done years before. And so yeah, it's awesome to see her back out there rocking and selling out shows. And just, it's just cool to see the people I, you know, came up listening to are still rocking. I hope I'm still doing it, you know.
Well, you're young, and you've had, though, you have just broken through. Let me tell you, you've been in the industry, what, 14, 15 years, something like
yeah.
that?
It's crazy. I know, right? Time flies, yeah.
And you have 13 number one singles as an artist. You've got 14 as a songwriter. So you do everything. You do everything from soup to nuts.
Right.
You've got 3-time platinum albums, two-time platinum, and on and on and on and on. What... I guess my question is, you know, there are so many people who I think are super, super talented, and country's like the hot genre, super talented. Is it luck? What is it that allows someone to break out such as yourself and someone who is also talented just not get anywhere?
Yeah, you know, that's a mystery that I don't know if will ever be solved in Nashville. There's so many talented people, and honestly, I think that's what keeps me going and keeps me humble and knowing that, you know, there's anybody out there right now that would, you know, take my spot. And it's just it is, you know, I think it is luck being at the right place at the right time. But also, I mean, it takes a lot of hard work and, you know, the song. I think that's one thing people may not realize if you don't live in Nashville, if you're not in the music business, is how powerful one song is. It can break an artist. Yeah. You know what I mean? You never heard of it. It's just, it can save somebody's career. It's powerful. So I think, you know, as long as you've got the songs, that's why I moved to Nashville to be a songwriter, because if you've got the song, they can't take that from you. And, you know, that's kind of how I got my start. I had some songs recorded by other artists, and then, labels were like, why aren't you singing these? And I said, I don't know. That's a great question. And that just kind of led to my record deal. But everybody's got their own path and story. But yeah, you're right. There's so many talented people in Nashville that deserve to be heard. But I do think the way, you know, social media and just the way things are exploding, the way people are finding music, I think you have a better chance than ever to get discovered just because of, you know, how many people are online and looking for new music.
There is a freedom that comes from not being tied to a record company. Like you're right, with social media, so many people can discover someone and that can just blow up, and they just did it, you know, in their recorded it in their right. living room or their car or wherever they did. And yes. they just have so much talent, which I love that. I absolutely love that. Just one more question about country in general. And then I just want to get to today being what would be Charlie Kirk's 32nd birthday and a song that you have released that was inspired by Erica Kirk. And my last question for you about the industry is, it seems to me as if country has changed so much that it's become the new rock. If you listen to country music from like the 70s, the 60s, 70s, I don't think they would recognize today's country music as being country.
Right.
It's kind of filled that void of the great rock bands of the 70s and 80s. It seems like country has filled that void.
Yeah, you know, I think it's always going to be changing the sound. To me, you know, country has always been more about, you know, than just the instruments used or whatever. It's lyrics. It's the message. I don't think any genre of music can, you know, tell a story. Like I said, I love all music, but country, just there's something about the storytelling. But yeah, I would agree with you. The sound is definitely changing. But as we just talked about, you know, more people having opportunities. I mean, it's kind of one of those things. People are always going to complain of what's country, what's not. But you can kind of listen to whatever you want to and just promote the music you like, you know? So, that's kind of, you know, where we're at with that. There's, you know, a lot of great music out there. And, you know, the fact that I get to write and sing country music is, it's amazing.
Yeah, no, it's fantastic. And you clearly, obviously, were talented in both areas. So that's just a double gift, that you have been blessed with. So let's talk about the song, Make Heaven Crowded, which, yeah. By the way, I realize it's going to be a long time by the time I get there. But when I get there, I would like some elbow room. So I don't know how crowded we want to make it. Okay?
Exactly. Yeah. it's probably, hopefully it's already pretty packed. But what a message.
But you wrote this song after you heard the speech from Erica Kirk at his memorial. What was it about her speech that inspired you to make this? What did she say that just this really touched you and you were able to write and record this song so quickly?
Yeah, you know, I mean, what do you say in a situation like that? I just happened to catch a clip of her saying, you know, Make Heaven Crowded, the title of the song. But it wasn't even that, which is a phenomenal just way to live. What a world it would be if we all lived to try to make heaven crowded. But it was more when she said, Charlie, you know, you beside Jesus doing what you always wanted to do, make heaven crowded. And it was the doing what you always wanted to do that hit me harder than the make heaven crowded, because it made me take a look in the mirror. You know, I'm a new dad, just had our first child, and you start, I've always heard it change your perspective, but it really does. And if God's given me a gift to write songs and in a situation like this, to try to find some words that may help, you know, and it really just made me evaluate where I was in my own life. And, you know, although I never got a chance to meet Charlie, I hope I get a chance someday to tell Erica how inspired, you know, I've been by just her strength in a time that I don't know how I would ever get through something like that. So, you know, it's just all like the, to see the reaction as well. Obviously, I knew writing the song, I wasn't the only one feeling like that. And it just, it really is. It feels like a time for, you know, everybody to come together. I've said that before. Things happen, bad things happen, and we all come together. And then as time goes by, we all kind of drift back apart and back to our normal lives. But I hope this time we can, you know, really wake up and just know that we can do better.
Well, it's interesting because you kind of have walked into what I was going to ask you next is you talk in the song about lines outside of churches. Wouldn't it be great to see, you know, a line to get into a church? And after the assassination of Charlie, we did see that in the immediate aftermath, right? But Mike, and we've seen revival on campuses. We've seen professional football, college football players kneel in the end zone to openly and proudly pray. But my question is, does it last, or is it just one of those things that everybody just felt so strong about with that assassination that they had to do something? Does it last?
Yeah. I mean, that's the question. And you know what? Only we can answer that. We have the answer to that, that we have to do something and not, you know, look at your own life, your own family, like whatever is around you and know that, you know, if you don't stand up for it, it may not be here. And that is, like I said, I wish it wouldn't have been this that gave us such a wake-up call. But, you know, I'm still learning, and the more clips I see of Charlie, just how incredible of a human he was and just how, you know, he just wanted everybody to be happy. And you know, he spread the word I think he set a great example. And looking at the way he lived his life, I think I can take several things from that and apply it to mine. And I hope other people can too. You know, I'm not a preacher. I don't judge people. I really kind of just try to be good to people and do my own thing. But there comes a time when that's not good enough anymore. I mean, I have a platform, and I, you know, God's given me the ability to write and sing songs. So, you know, this getting a chance to do that and you know, spread Jesus' name and in my music is something that is long overdue. And I just, you know, I just thank Erica and Charlie and just the way they live their lives for influencing folks like me and millions of others.
Well, I think it's beautiful. Everybody has to check it out. Make Heaven Crowded. It's a fantastic song. And for your first foray, you know, into a more of a, like a Christian rock type song, it's really beautiful. And the words, clearly you have a gift for that because the words do seem very inspired. So thank you for that. Thank you for taking the time to come on the show. I know you have to go catch an airplane, and if I keep you like a minute longer, I'm going to get yelled at.
Hey, no,
so
I appreciate you taking the time and just letting me be, like I said, a part of such a special day. And like I said, I think we can just continue to honor Charlie by the way we live and just keep spreading the good word.
Yeah, absolutely. And congratulations on that little girl.
Hey, thank you. Thank you. I'm loving it.
All right. Cole Swindell, thank you so much. Have a safe trip back home. Thank you for joining me here. You can follow him on X at Cole, C-O-L-E, Swindell, S-W-I-N-D-E-L-L. More coming up on The Brian Kilmeade Show.
What if we all talk to Jesus like a friend? Talk to our friends about him and didn't stop till we got everybody in. What if churches had a longer line outside than all them bars on Friday nights? What if people prayed for people who ain't on their side?
Don't go anywhere. Brian Kilmeade will be right back.
Hi, everyone. It's Brian Kilmeade here. Are you tired of those uncomfortable dress shirts, especially when they bunch up under a sweater? If so, then you must check out Collars & Co., makers of the Dress Collar Polo. Listen up. These shirts are four-way stretch, buttery soft polos with firm dress collars on them, so they give you the dress shirt look, but extremely comfortable polo feel. You can wear them with anything, under a sweater, with a blazer, or by themselves as an elevated polo. They work for any occasion. These polos are perfect, whether it's in the office, on a golf course, or a night out. Collars & Co. is exploding and have gone viral on social media thanks to the $1 million investment they received on Shark Tank from Mark Cuban and Peter Jones. You don't have to worry about collars that flop down and spread out. They stay firm and sharp all day. It's an amazing array of sweaters, quarter zips, pants, and outerwear. If you're looking for the performance dress shirt or polo that looks great all day, check out collarsandco.com. Use promo code Brian for 15% off of any purchase of $100 or more. That's promo code Brian.
Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
This is a day of profound hope and joy for the entire free world, and a day only possible under the leadership and strength and fortitude of President Donald J. Trump. And everyone recognizes that, and they're all talking about it around the world. With this historic achievement, President Trump has accomplished what others have only talked about or even tried and failed.
That was Speaker Johnson praising Donald Trump for getting everything signed, doing what he did yesterday. 36 hours. I can remember 36 hours, and he was an hour late to Israel. I was like, how can he be an hour late? I think it's probably something that happens all the time, you know, with Air Force One and security and this and that and the roads. But it was great to see. I don't know if you saw the picture, you know, from Air Force One flying into Tel Aviv yesterday, and they had this big banner on the beach there because they knew he would see it with like the outline of his profile. And then they had yellow hair, and then it had this thank you, President Trump, you know, with American and Israeli flags. It was really, really nice. I wanted to get to some of the other comments for Trump, praising Trump. It's not all of them come from the usual suspects. For instance, this is Bill Maher on Club Random yesterday, and he was talking about giving Trump credit, and he was with William H. Macy, who is not a Trump fan at all. And it's fun to watch these because you watch these people who are not Trump fans, and here's Bill Maher going, no, this is why you have to give credit where credit is due. And you can tell they're uncomfortable. So here's Bill Maher, and you'll also hear William H. Macy during this as well, giving Trump some credit.
I always say this, you cannot ever deny success. You just have to give your respect, even if it's not your thing. Have the humility to give it up for enormous success on any level.
Mm-hmm.
I agree. Trump, not my choice, didn't vote for him, but somehow,
a lot of people did.
And he's... I can't deny the success.
I can't either.
Yeah.
And he's the president.
Yeah, suddenly they have respect for the president. Huh. Imagine that. And then William Macy went on to pointed to a signed sheet of paper that Bill Maher has in his studio. And what it was he made up a list of all the names that President Trump has called him over the years. And when he went to the White House in April to meet with the president, he sat down with him, broke bread with him. And he asked President Trump to sign it, which he did. He gladly is like, yeah, he signed it. And so it's hanging up. And Macy said that's brilliant. And Bill Maher said, this is what's so amazing, that he, off the top of his head, could come up with 56 different names to call him. He said, it's hip and it's something about the human mind or some human minds. And he said, I couldn't come up with that many names for someone. He has also said that Trump was one of the most effective politicians due to his authenticity. He said, Trump really is one of the most effective politicians, whatever you think of the policy and him as a person, just as a politician, just understanding that. Always lean into being more who you are. The people are not savvy about issues, but they smell a phony a mile away. And nobody else does that. And he's right. He's absolutely right. Nobody else does that. All right. I want to move on to Cut 15. This is Scott Jennings on CNN, and they were having a conversation, obviously, about this. And President Obama not acknowledging President Trump for this win in the Middle East.
He's been the most hyper-political and hyper-partisan post-president we've ever had. He's still acting that way. They're not over the fact that Donald Trump won the national popular vote last year. And they keep warning about the same things that they were warning and fussing about during the campaign, to which the American people then responded to. I think Donald Trump is executing every part of his agenda in almost exactly the way that he promised he was going to, up to and including enforcing laws in the United States that have been on the books for a very, very long time that his predecessor chose simply not to execute. You throw that on top of the fact that he's having this extraordinary success on the world stage, and I just think Democrats from Obama on down are having a heck of a time understanding where they went wrong and how Donald Trump has captivated a nation and now the entire world.
Yeah, I think he's right. They just can't wrap their brains around it. They can't do it. It's just not happening for them. And along those lines, I just want to wrap this up here with Cut 16. Scott Adams puts it perfectly with what's happening on the left.
So meanwhile, while the so-called Hitler is finding peace for Israel, the Democrats are still whining about him being an authoritarian Hitler. And while we're all watching the authoritarian Hitler bring peace to the entire world, the Democrats could not be losing harder than they are today. Today is peak losing for Democrats. They just got to shut up at this point. Just let it go, right? Just let it go. There's nothing you should say right now except thank you, Mr. President.
And to their credit, some Democrats did stand up and say thank you, including both of the Clintons. Both Hillary and Bill did give Donald Trump credit. So credit where credit is due there, I have to hand that to them, because I think it takes a big person to be able to do that. Although, how sad is it that we give someone credit because they said, hey, thanks for peace in the Middle East. Thanks for that. But so many of them can't do it. And I'm kind of shocked at Barack Obama a little bit. Then again, maybe not really. I'm Mary Walter, and you've been listening to The Brian Kilmeade Show.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Welcome to the Brian Kilmeade Show. I am Mary Walter, sitting in for Brian. You can find me on X at Mary Walter Radio. There's no S on that. My live cast is tonight, Tuesday night, 7:15 p.m. Eastern Time. It is live on YouTube, Getter, and Rumble. Just look for Mary Walter Radio. And you can join us, leave comments, ask questions, etc. of our guests. Or sometimes it's just us, not always political either. And then the audio is available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Spreaker. Again, look for Mary Walter Radio. Coming up later this hour, Reagan Charleston will be joining us. She's a New Orleans attorney, and we will talk about the ICE raids and the legality of the ICE raids, and also the allegations that Trump is weaponizing the DOJ against his political opponents. Joining us now is Molly Hemingway. She's a Fox News contributor, editor-in-chief of The Federalist. You can follow her on X at MZ Hemingway. Molly, welcome to the Brian Kilmeade Show. It's so great to have you.
Great to be here with you, Mary.
So there's so much I want to talk to you about. So let's talk about the Presidential Medal of Freedom. That's a big story today for Charlie Kirk. And it would be his 32nd birthday today. And the president really wanted to do this, so much so that he made that whirlwind trip to the Middle East and back. And I don't know when this man sleeps and how he's just not exhausted, but somehow he doesn't. I guess explain to us, like, how important is this, and who are the type of people that get this Presidential Medal of Freedom?
Well, Mary, the Presidential Medal of Freedom in the current incarnation was developed by President John F. Kennedy to honor Americans who have done great work outside of the military service. And so you've seen a wide variety of people get this. But frequently, I mean, you see everything from actors to baseball players to leaders of organizations, former presidents, you know, Nancy Pelosi. And the left has really given this award out a lot. Even when a Republican is president, they tend to give a lot to people on the left. During Trump's first term, he did not give out that many awards. One of them was to Rush Limbaugh. And I thought that was so interesting because Rush Limbaugh, for many conservatives, he was a conservative leader, right? He helped people think through difficult topics. But he also was just the best person in radio who ever existed. People on the left and right admit that. He was a pioneer in the field, and he had done such great work. And he gave that award the evening of the State of the Union, his last State of the Union address in 2020. And it was just a wonderful moment. And I thought, it's important that the right have its folk heroes honored as well. Mm-hmm. And there could be no better candidate, in my view, than Charlie Kirk, who literally died fighting for what he believed in and trying to help America understand the importance, not just of free speech, but other things he cared about, like his conservative politics and most importantly, his Christian faith.
Yeah, absolutely. And how, can I just ask a dumb question? How can Democrats give out a Presidential Medal of Freedom if there's a Republican in the White House?
Oh, no, I'm saying that previous Republican presidents, they might give some conservatives some of these awards, but they would package it in with a lot of people on the left. And you saw that. I mean, I think George W. Bush was giving out awards to the head of the NAACP, the owner of the Washington Post, a top journalist at the New York Times. I mean, I actually think that's ridiculous, but they might also do that while also giving the award to a conservative. And it was kind of a way, it seemed almost like a way to say, don't get mad at us for giving it to conservatives, because see, we've also given it out to some of your people. Whereas Trump is more restrained. He has historically been more restrained in this award, giving it out, but he just gives it to people he thinks deserve it.
Well, he wants it to have meaning. I mean, if you give it to everyone, I think it loses its meaning. If it's something more rare, I think it carries more weight, right? Like, wow, you got a Presidential Medal of Freedom. Yeah, so did the guy selling the tacos down the street. You know what I mean? Like,
exactly. And also, you know, I don't know, politicians in general might not always be people you want to be getting it. But Trump, I think, gave one to Rudy Giuliani this year, which I think was important because this man was such a hero post 9/11 for so many people, kept the country together, kept his city together, and had been a target of the left. So it shows some boldness in giving it to him. And then I think he also gave one to Ben Carson, the great brain surgeon, who also is just such a hero to so many people.
Yeah. Yeah. And I notice it's not that big of a deal when like it kind of hits the news cycle, but it doesn't hit the news cycle when maybe it's just when Trump does it, or just that the news cycle is so crazy with Trump as president that that's nothing. Right. They're like, we don't have time for that.
We've got an hour to devote to it and we're moving on.
Exactly. So, you know, interesting. I just want to bring this in because you talked about how Republicans kind of almost apologize when they hand this, when they give this out. So they have to give it to some to liberals as well. Marjorie Taylor Greene, I mean, she's very angry. Nobody wants to listen to her. So she's very upset. But she did say something that I kind of agree with. She did say that Republican men are weak. Republican men in Congress are weak. And I have to tell you, this is something my husband has said for probably 10 years now, that the women are the ones with all the guts. The women are the ones who will stand by their convictions. They want to get things done. He's like, it's probably just because they want to just get it done and go home, right? Like, whereas for the men, this is their career, whereas maybe for the women, it's not as much their career. But I do see some of that changing in Trump's second term. Do you agree with her and my husband's assessment of the men in the GOP?
It's like a frustration I've had for a very long time.
Yes.
The weakness and lack of just courage. And courage is an important trait to have in politics because men follow courage. They don't follow titles. So just because you're a member of Congress, just because you're a senator, does not mean that you're going to inspire people. But we have a lot of big problems in this country, and some of them require a lot of wisdom and courage in order to fight them. I mean, you take this budget battle that we're in right now, and the Democrats are saying that they really want to have permanent subsidies for Obamacare. Now, Republicans should know how to talk about this, right? They opposed Obamacare. Yeah. They voted against Obamacare. They failed to do anything real with Obamacare. You know, remember John McCain famously went out and did his little thumbs down gesture when he was the vote needed to finally overturn it. So Republicans said, this is not going to work. It's going to constantly require subsidies. And Democrats said, no, no, no. And the media said, no, no, no. And now it turns out that we've got enough experience to know it's been nothing but subsidies, and it's going to keep going. And so you need people to have the courage to come out and explain this, talk about it, hold the people responsible, accountable for this subsidy crisis. And instead, they just kind of sound weak, like, oh, don't worry, we'll figure it out. We'll figure out a way to continue these subsidies forever. And it's just frustrating because you actually need someone to be bold and smart enough to talk about it in a way that is persuasive.
Well, it's super easy. They told us, first of all, we had to pass it to find out what was in it. But when we found out what was in it, they told us that Obamacare was going to lower the costs for everyone, that everyone would have insurance, and that it was going to be affordable. So the subsidies should phase out. What happened? Republicans should just ask them, well, what happened?
Or say, when will this end? Is this the last? Oh, you know, give us like an actual amount that you think will be the end of this subsidy nightmare. And to your point, it is more expensive now. And we were, that was the one thing we're told. What was the name of the bill? The Affordable Care Act. Right. You had the Washington Post come out and say, oh, it turns out Republicans were right, and the Affordable Care Act is not affordable. Well, yeah. Great, thanks. Now that it's firmly ensconced and it's going to be very difficult to fix. But it's actually like a, it's going to be a financial crisis to keep it going the way it's going, because it will just require increased subsidies until the whole system is completely broken.
Well, but that was the point. The point of Obamacare, in my humble opinion, was to get socialized medicine for this country. So they started out this way. It was totally unsustainable. We all knew it wasn't going to work. They knew it wasn't. Democrats knew it wasn't going to work. Obama knew it wasn't going to work, but it wasn't supposed to work. This was about the government lawyers controlling medical care. And, you know, and what doctors do. That's what this is about. And this is about the government being in control of your care. Socialized medicine. We made such a mess. Don't worry. We'll come in and fix it. And we'll make it national and be socialized. That's exactly what it is.
You also think about how we were the place in the entire world where all the top medical professionals wanted to be. And we had all of our smart kids wanting to become doctors because it was a great way to both be smart and practice your craft and make a lot of money. And now it's not a way to make a lot of money because of this government takeover of the system. So smart people don't want to go into it. And so it's just like, and then we're having to import more and more people to actually fill these slots. And it's like, just, it's just a disaster.
It is. Well, my husband's a physician, and he cannot wait. He counts down the days to he could retire. And the only reason he stays in it is for health care, ironically, for insurance.
Unbelievable.
If you can stay with us, I want to talk to you about Letitia James coming up. And we have some audio for you, because I just love the way she speaks. I can't get enough of it. I want my ways to be in Letitia James' voice for directions. So if you wouldn't mind staying, I would. I think that would be great. Can you stay?
Absolutely.
Fantastic. We've got more with Molly Hemingway coming up on The Brian Kilmeade Show.
Politics, current events, and news that affects you. Brian's got a lot more to say. Stay with Brian Kilmeade. Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on The Brian Kilmeade Show.
We see powerful voices trying to silence truth and punish dissent and, yes, weaponize justice for political gain. We are witnessing the fraying of our democracy, the erosion of our system of government. This, my friends, is a defining moment in our history. Let us stand together to defend our rights, to protect every safeguard, every institution, every immigrant, every norm, and every rule of law.
So that was one of the most self-unaware people on the planet, Letitia James. In New York City, she was speaking at a Mamdani event. And wow, like I said, this just the lack of total any kind of self-awareness is absolutely insane to me. In studio with us is Molly Hemingway, Fox News contributor, editor-in-chief of The Federalist. You can find her on X at MZ Hemingway. So, Molly, What is happening? Is she really that self-unaware, or is she just doing this for the uneducated masses?
I don't know if she's not self-aware. And what I mean by that is, even though she used the phrase rule of law there, she is one of our most prominent practitioners of rule of man. She ran for office saying she had found the criminal, and the criminal was Donald Trump, his children, his family, his organization, and she would figure out the crime. Which is, you know, an old saying that they used to do in the Soviet Union. Find me the man and I'll show you the crime. And she campaigned on that. She pledged that. The people of New York voted for her to do that, to accomplish that. And she put forth a case that was so ridiculous. You know, remember, it was about how Donald Trump had taken out a loan, repaid it with interest to the satisfaction of the bank. And he was the crime there, whatever that crime might be, was so bad that he had to pay, wasn't it like $354 million, he and his organization?
And with the interest, it's like over $500 million, but I think they swatted that down.
It was voided because it was absolutely preposterous and ridiculous. It was so bad that the governor of New York came out and said afterwards, because all these businesses were saying, wait, he just got fined hundreds of millions of dollars for things we do every day. Are we going to be worried? Should we pull our businesses out of New York? And the New York governor, Kathy Hochul, said, don't worry. This was just about Donald Trump. That's not rule of law. That's rule of man. And so Democrats have had a rule of man. They go after their political opponents, and there's been no pushback whatsoever. And when you don't have rule of law, it's a complete breakdown of the country. So yes, her thinking there was that if she participated in this Democrat lawfare campaign, which wasn't just her case, it was all sorts of cases to keep him off the ballot, to bankrupt him, to imprison him for the rest of his life, that she would never be held accountable. And she gambled and she lost, because it turns out that not only did it not work, their plot to go after Republicans, but she had not lived a perfectly clean life at all and had engaged in the very thing that she accused Donald Trump of, which was mortgage fraud.
So
allegedly,
which I absolutely love. And she also allegedly just made a mistake when she said she was married to her father, because we all make that mistake, you know.
Well,
close to my dad every now and then, I think I married him, unless you're Ilhan Omar, and then maybe it's your brother.
Right. Well, I don't, who knows? You know, families are different. But but the situation, you know, I read through the indictment last week, and it does look like she committed just very standard mortgage fraud, the kind that you're warned about if you ever purchase a second property. Any good people involved in the mortgage business will say you cannot do what she did, which was claim that she would be living in this place that she had no intention of living in.
So what are the odds of her actually being convicted? Because she's being tried in Virginia, in the Eastern District of Virginia, where Comey will be. And because her property, one of the properties, was in Virginia, because a New York jury would never convict her, ever. We have a problem in this country with politicized juries. They raise their hand and they say that they will, you know, do this and unprejudiced and all this other stuff. And they raise their hand and say that and then break that vow. They break that promise. So what are the odds of her actually seeing any kind of justice?
Yeah, the libertarian in me always kind of loves a good jury nullification where the jury just says, yeah, he did it, but we're not going to convict him because we don't think it's a big deal. And here's another problem. Yes, in both Washington, D.C., to the largest extent, but also the Eastern District of Virginia, you have juries engage in jury nullification. So you saw this most prominently during the last 5 years when you had hundreds of cases going through the D.C. courts related to the January 6th riot, and every single jury went for like maximum penalty on everything, or, you know, went for maximum damage. But then when someone would be caught like lying to create the Russia collusion hoax, they'd say, I mean, is that really a crime? And so Eastern District of Virginia, it's going to be the same exact thing, probably. Having said that, they did get the indictment through a grand jury of Eastern District, which even that is kind of impressive. The thing is, she's so obviously, you know, the indictment looks very bad for her. So it would be, I think, a little harder. It's not really a nebulous situation. It's not like a truly complicated case. She made a claim. It appears that claim was not true. So if a jury has any kind of integrity, I'd say it's at least going to be a decent case.
Yeah. And she campaigned. I mean, for her to talk there about weaponizing justice for political gain, she literally campaigned on getting Donald Trump, as to your point. Like said it out loud. I don't know if people understand. She's on video laughing about it. She campaigned on it. And now she's got the chutzpah to cry about the weaponization of our judicial system. I just have to play cut 34, because this is where I expect, when she gets into this mode, I expect the choir to come out and people start yelling hallelujah. Here we go.
You see, I know what it feels like to be attacked for just doing your job, but I also know what it feels like to overcome adversity. So I stand on solid rock, and I will not bow. I will not break. I will not bend. I will not capitulate. I will not give in. I will not give up. You come for me, you gotta come to all of us.
I love what she does at the end of her words. I stand on solid rock. You come for all of us. She does that. She does that long. She draws it out there. It just, I love it. I need that in ways. I really do.
You can see how she was elected so many times because of this. I mean, I just was thinking as she's saying that, there's reporting out of the UK right now that the person who she was like letting live in this house, or who was renting from her niece,
yeah,
was like a fugitive from justice, possibly, which is just not what you want your attorney general to be. You don't want that kind of headline with your attorney general when they're supposed to be involved with enforcing rule of law. But far worse to me than a politician being that way is that the media are going along with this false claim of weaponization of justice after ignoring it during the Democrat era.
Yeah, well, they are in the pocket of the Democrats, and I think they're betting on the wrong horse. Molly Hemingway, thank you so much for joining me. Really appreciate it. Follow her on X at MZ Hemingway and at The Federalist. Have a fantastic day, and thank you for joining me on The Brian Kilmeade Show.
Thanks, Mary.
Fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
I'm Mary Walter, sitting in for Brian Kilmeade on The Brian Kilmeade Show. You can find me on X at Mary Walter Radio. There's no S in that. It's just Mary Walter Radio. And, of course, my podcast available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Spreaker, and live tonight on YouTube, Rumble, and Getter at 7:15 p.m. Again, just look for Mary Walter Radio. Let's get some free legal advice, shall we? Joining us now is Reagan Charleston. She is an attorney out of New Orleans. You can follow her on X at Attorney Reagan. Super easy. Reagan, thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Mary.
So for the illegal immigrants listening, apparently, from what I've read, you can get together and file a lawsuit against the government if they pick you up and they don't have a warrant, or if they have not assessed whether you're a runner or not. What is that about?
Well, that's an incredible position. But, I mean, we do have to keep in mind that everyone has due process in the United States of America, whether they're citizens of the United States or otherwise. And, you know, and I know that right now immigration is an incredibly hot and difficult topic, and it's certainly heated on both sides. But, you know, everyone has due process in the United States.
Listen, I agree. How much due process did the illegals who were deported under Obama get? Do you know?
That is a good question, you know, and I know that it's a difficult, you know, it doesn't matter who is in office, it's definitely a difficult topic, but, you know, immigration and citizenship is something that's always going to be at the forefront of legal discourse, and especially in times like these where we're seeing, you know, administration changes.
Yeah, according to the ACLU, the Obama administration put speed over fairness when it came to deporting under the Obama administration. I just find it odd that no one had any problem with any of that. 75% of the people were fast-tracked and streamlined, and it was devoid of fairness and individualized due process. So interesting.
Well, I mean, it's like anything. There's going to be people that are critical of the administration. And I think that that's something that we've always seen coming from, you know, the liberal camp and media camp, especially, that it's just that everyone's very hypocritical. And it doesn't matter if the same process has been followed before. You know, it's if the Republicans are doing it, it's inherently wrong, bad, right?
Exactly.
But we always have due process. It's just now that people are shouting from the rooftops, and they don't seem to realize that the same process has been used, you know, concurrently for the last century.
Yes. So there's a lawsuit out of Colorado, and it's kind of what I was alluding to with my first question. And this suit asks a federal judge to bar ICE agents from arresting people without first assessing whether an arrest is necessary because the person is likely to flee. So you have to first assess whether they're likely to be a runner. Do citizens get the same type of deference, or do we just get arrested?
Citizens just get arrested. I can't imagine how would a law enforcement officer actually apply that standard. What is the criteria? Are they trained on this? What are the signs that one is likely to flee? It seems like it would be very problematic for law enforcement officers to assess. I mean, what can you say about flight risk, and how is that actually effective? Again, we go back to the issues of politics and law enforcement and immigration, and how when something is so heated that people are not really, you know, utilizing common sense and looking at the big picture.
Yeah, it just seems ridiculous. Like, when they run, then you can go get them. I don't know if you ever saw the show on Comedy Central, Reno 911.
I did.
You did? Okay, so doesn't it sound like a very Reno 911 type of situation?
It does sound like a Reno 911 scenario, right? Like, oh, there he goes. Like, let's go. I mean, how do you really? I mean, that sounds like such a problematic standard for a law enforcement officer or a law enforcement agency to train, utilize, and then defend. I mean, let's talk about how vague that is. It becomes problematic on so many levels. But, you know, there is federal oversight. So it's, the buck isn't going to stop with that yeah. district court judge.
Yeah. So I just find it amazing that this happens. And, you know, like they also said, one of the women who is one of the plaintiffs in this, she is a Utah State student. So she goes to school, she's a college student in Utah. She's in the country illegally. She's from Brazil. She's been in the country since she was 7. Her parents brought her here and they overstayed the tourist visa. And so they've managed to stay here for a good, 15 years. And there seems to be, she has a pending asylum application, but there seems to be this attitude of, if you can evade authorities for 15, 20 years, then you can just stay. She was not born in this country. And, you know, I don't think citizens get the same deference of, like, well, if you can just avoid prosecution for like 15, 20 years, no one's going to arrest you. And they're saying the problem is that she was stopped. She had a traffic stop. And state officials say that the sheriff's deputy alerted ICE to her immigration status after the traffic stop, and they're not allowed to do that. But if you or I have a traffic stop, don't they run to see if I'm wanted for anything? Don't they run that?
Generally, they'll run your license, right? Yeah, and if you have a warrant out for your arrest, you're going to go to jail. You know, I'm in Italy right now, and I don't know what kind of benefits I'd get if I were here illegally, had overstayed my welcome. I'd likely just go to jail. What the problem is when we talk about this, is that asylum applicants are already in a very, very, very long line. The asylum courts and judges are overwhelmed by their dockets. There are so many individuals that seek asylum from across the world. And the United States is where everyone who is seeking asylum wants to come. And it's very difficult. And over the last, you know, 30, 40 years, so many individuals have come in and they've been granted asylum, which is already a difficult process, which her family had been granted asylum at some point and they all came together, which they're very fortunate to do. But, you know, oftentimes their ultimate hearing will be, like you said, you know, 15 years down the road. They may get, it may be postponed. They may have status conferences, but ultimately there's no adjudication of their rights or their asylum status. So, you know, in her particular case, being pulled over or some kind of infraction, sometimes that you can lose your asylum status because of that. And I know that there's a particular focus on immigration right now, and you know, the law is the law, and it doesn't necessarily feel like it, you know, it's warm and fuzzy, but it can't. We, you know, we have to have rules, we have to have laws, and asylum is a very, very difficult area.
Yeah, no, she and the family, they overstayed their visas and have just lived here, I assume, illegally, and now she's applying for asylum. She has a pending asylum.
So they had not yet applied, okay.
Yeah, because, you know, 15 years is...
Well, that's a very different situation than someone, you know, that's leaving a war-torn country and seeking asylum in the United States. That's a backdoor asylum case, and that's not how it works.
Yeah. I want to talk to you about Instagram and a new setting for teen accounts. Can you stay?
Okay. So I am on the plaintiff steering committee and the consolidated actions in state court in California for the social media addiction lawsuits. And that the first bellwether trial is set to be heard next month in front of Judge Kuhl there. And, you know, the first thing I thought when I saw my New York Times notification go off that Instagram had implemented or announced this this content moderation feature was that it's on the eve of trial. It's that too little, too late, but it's also just to garner public favor. And, you know, what this feature update is that Instagram is now going to moderate content for teens and children, child users, using a PG-13 standard. And, you know, just the use of PG-13, I feel like that's it's kind of like a dog whistle, right? I mean, parents are automatic. They feel like it's going to make parents feel safe. It's something they're familiar with. But there's a few things we have to keep in mind. You know, historically, Meta's safety features for children have been ineffective. I mean, we know that that's the case. They're human content moderators and their bot moderators, their AI moderators are ineffective. Harmful content gets through. But then you also think about PG-13, and I've seen plenty of PG-13 movies that include nudity, drugs, sex, language. I don't think it's necessarily a bulletproof vest for child safety. I really do. I believe that, you know, not only is this going to lack substantive improvement for the social media platform, but it's just a symbolic gesture. And, you know, if you think, too, that it's on the eve of trial, like if we think about talc, you know, and baby powder, J&J knew of the dangers, but they really didn't pull the product from the shelves until after lawsuits were filed. So this is even emptier than that. How effective can this truly be if children are still bypassing the safety and, you know, age-gating mechanisms that the social media apps currently have? I mean, plenty of kids get on that shouldn't be using the app that are under 13. They're collecting data on those kids, and they're seeing adult content. And it's, you know, the safety features are already impotent. So what are we really achieving here? And I think it's just seems like PR to me. It's just spin.
Yeah, and you know, I saw an article about, you know, everything old is new again, and parents wanting to get their kids off devices and cut down on screen time. They took the kids' phones away in this one neighborhood in Seattle. All the parents got together, and they put landlines in their houses. And they said, but the kids in this article said they like it. The parents like it. The parents love that the kids are learning how to answer a phone and not know who's there. They have to say hello. Or if they call their friend's house, they have to maybe make some small talk with the mom or dad who answers the phone and then ask if, you know, is you know, Jared home? And so they're learning manners and they're learning how to
social
interact.
Social skills, right?
Yeah.
Social skills that people seem to lack now. The kids, you stick a tablet in front of them or give them a cell phone and, you know, put them on YouTube. It's detrimental to the child. And I think that getting back to the basics, yes, a simple like, hello, this is John. May I ask who's speaking? Things like that, the kids are just not doing nowadays. You know, they don't have their face in books. They're not out riding bikes. They're scrolling an endless, infinite scroll on Instagram, Snapchat, and YouTube. And it's not just detrimental to their social aptitude. It's actually harmful to their brains and the video games that they're playing. It's affecting their hormone levels. I mean, the impact that tech has on our young people is astounding. And I'm so glad that parents are finally starting to take note, and not just parents, like, you know, scattered, that there are whole communities that are coming together and saying, hey, there's a problem. We have to come together. We have to combat it. You know, lawyers can't be out there on the front lines alone. You know, we can't be the only ones educating. And there's been a huge governmental push, and there's a lot of politicians that are standing behind parents. And this is a bipartisan issue. And that's a difficult thing because tech pumps so much money into Washington. But this is something that we can all agree on. We do not want our children to be harmed unnecessarily by technological advances. Look, I'm an adult. Social media is great for adults, right? My brain is not still developing. There are so many harms that young people experience that, you know, can impact them in so many different ways. And it's crucial that parents are informed. It's crucial that parents take action. And it's imperative that we limit our children's exposure, especially young children, to social media platforms and tech. It's just something like put them on a bike, put them on the telephone, a landline. Like, this shouldn't be groundbreaking. Like, let's let kids be kids.
Absolutely. And everything old is new again. The pendulum eventually swings back to the middle, and you're going to see, I think, more parents start to crack down. It's hard because it's what your kids want. But, you know, my parents' generation was able to look at us and go, no. And that was the end of it. And you cried and whined, and my mother would just grab the back of your arm and say, keep this up, and we're going to go home, and there's going to be a spanking. And that's the end of it. And then then all of a sudden you straighten up in public, right? Like that's the end of the tantrum.
Exactly.
So some of the old school parenting, I think, is missing and maybe had a role, a very valuable role, and part of that is the ability to say no.
Well, you know, Reagan, why, Mary?
I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, because parents stick a tablet in front of their kids because it's easy for them. You know, it's easy to distract your kid. And I think that's also a problem that parents have to ask themselves, look inside and say, why am I sticking giving my kid a tablet to make my job easier today?
It drives me crazy. Seeing these little kids like in the shopping cart with the tablet, just like looking at them, they've got their fingers in their mouths because they're like 4 years old. It drives me crazy.
I think parents they're not informed of how truly harmful it is. And that's why the information is crucial, that parents really understand the dangers of social media and technology and what they do to young brains.
Yeah. Well, along those lines, I do have a study coming up next here that was done about screen time, the formation of your kid's brain and their verbal skills and some other skills as well, and how it affects that. So we're going to do that next. Reagan Charleston, thank you so much for joining me. You can enjoy Italy. I'm so jealous.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me, Mary. Absolutely. You can follow her at Attorney Reagan, R-E-A-G-A-N, just like the president. So I've got that study coming up next on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
It's Brian Kilmeade.
It's Will Kane Country. Watch it live at noon Eastern Monday through Thursday at foxnews.com or on the Fox News YouTube channel. And don't miss the show. Listen and follow the podcast 5 days a week at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
So we were just speaking with Reagan Charleston out of New Orleans. She's an attorney. We were talking about screen time with kids. And I just came across a story. There's a high school in New Jersey in Wall Township that canceled the homecoming dance because of lack of interest. Nobody wants to go because they're all on their phones all the time. They'd rather sit in their room on their phones just typing to their friends. They don't know how to speak to each other face to face. They just don't know how to do it. It's really sad. You know, some said, well, it wasn't promoted, but the kids are saying, nah, kids are on their phones all the time. Nobody cares. Nobody wants to go. So this study that I was talking to Reagan about comes out of Toronto, and they found that the amount of time that young children spent watching TV, playing on their tablets, and using other digital devices before they take standardized tests in third grade and sixth grade predicted their reading and math scores on those tests. For every extra hour of daily screen time during those early years, children had 9 to 10% lower odds of scoring at a higher academic level in grade 3, third grade reading and math, and sixth grade math. And it studied the more than 3,300 children, and it collected the data from 2008 to 2023. So it's a good long chunk of time. They say children's brains are rapidly forming connections during these periods, and the study supports concerns that those formative years, if you have too much screen time, they're getting all the screen time, they think it interferes with the development of building blocks that children need for academic success. You're literally rewiring your kid's brain to function differently. So parents self-reported for routine doctor visits on how much screen time, how much time their kids spent watching TV and DVDs, playing on computers, handheld devices like smartphones and iPads, and playing video games on a typical day. So it's super interesting. It's the Ontario Education Quality. So check it out if you get some time. Could be very enlightening. I'm Mary Walter. You're listening to The Brian Kilmeade Show.
Fox News Radio Studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Well, Welcome to the Brian Kilmeade Show. I am Mary Walter, sitting in for Brian. I believe Brian is back with you tomorrow. You can follow me on X at Mary Walter Radio and my socials as well. Mary Walter Radio, YouTube, Getter, Rumble, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Spreaker. Podcast is live tonight. It's live cast tonight at 7:15 p.m. Eastern Time. Joining us now, Congresswoman Nancy Mace. She's part of the Oversight and Armed Services Committee, and she is also the future governor of the wonderful state of South Carolina. Congresswoman, thank you for joining me.
Yeah, thank you for having me today.
So, polls look good. You are running for to be the governor of South Carolina. Henry McMaster is termed, so he can no longer run. So it's an open seat, and it's pretty competitive. But as of right now, you are definitely in the lead, which is fantastic. So why are you doing that? Why are you going to give up Congress to pursue the governorship of South Carolina?
Well, first of all, I would argue it's not really that competitive, even though I have three people running against me. We're crushing it right now. We're deeply humbled by the overwhelming level of support. And if folks want to help out, then go to nancymace.org and chip in a dollar and help us in this last bit at the end of the year. But I've learned so much in Congress, sitting on the House Oversight, sitting on the House Armed Services Committee, getting grant funding for my district. I want to take what I've learned and take it statewide. We have a very high state income tax. It's the highest in the Southeast at 6.2%. Needs to be zero so we can compete with Florida and Tennessee and other states in the Southeast. We have a problem with illegal immigration. We have the Sinaloa cartel in South Carolina, Tren de Agua, MS-13, and I want to help follow Trump's lead and bring that America First agenda. I want to assist ICE in deportations and make sure that businesses are hiring American workers and not illegal aliens. And we have a lot of work to do to support Trump in this endeavor across the country.
Yeah, and I also think that state politics is slightly less disgusting than federal politics, than Washington, D.C.
Correct.
Having been, you know, I was in Washington. I worked there for 4 years, 1 year from home because of the pandemic. And I have to tell you, if unless you're in it, you don't understand it. Like, you have to be immersed in it to understand how our government is really run and how you constantly feel like you need a bath. Right?
Absolutely. Well, 100%. And then you can't get anything done. And as governor, we can accomplish so much more because the government closest to the people is the most effective government. And the conservative plan I put out on my first day when I jumped in has been championed. In fact, my opponents are copying and pasting my plan, which I think is fantastic. Because it's a great plan to make the state of South Carolina prosper. We're the 10th fastest growing state in the country right now. You know, and I want to make sure that we are built for the future, built for anything that the federal government could throw at us, that we'll be ready for it.
Now, you know, one of the things with South Carolina and North Carolina, you know, I am a prisoner in the People's Socialist Republic of New Jersey. And, you know, we're going to be hitting that age, like, you know, every generation. Now, I mean, it's new. Our parents, you know, grew up here, lived here their whole lives, and will die here, like, because they didn't have to do it. My generation has to get out. And so all of our friends are going to scatter to the winds. Everybody's talking about where they're going to go, right? Which is sad. You are not going to get to grow old with the people that we've spent most of our life with, like our parents. But I notice a lot of people go to the half, what they call the halfback, North and South Carolina, because it's halfway to Florida, and you can still get home in a day to see the grandkids. And,
and
I think that that affects you guys, though, right? Because you get a lot of these crazy liberals from New York and New Jersey who decide to move there, and then they want to turn your state blue.
Yes. And I mean, in Congress right now, I represent a very purple district. One of my largest counties was won by Kamala Harris. So we do see some of that in the South and in South Carolina. But I'll tell you, there are a lot of conservatives. They're moving from the Northeast, New York, New Jersey, especially, down to South Carolina. And they are also bringing their ideology, which is great for our state. The challenge that we have, because we're growing so fast, is the lack of infrastructure, energy challenges, and then the cost of living, because it's a lot of wealth coming down and can sometimes price out locals. And so that's why the tax, the state income tax, getting it to zero is so important for everyday hardworking South Carolinians. And I want to do what Trump would do. I want to be Trump in high heels and deliver on policies just like he has as president. I want to do the same thing as governor.
I now have a mental image of Donald Trump in high heels. that's something I never thought I would have in my head. You know, Marjorie Taylor Greene is very upset. You know, right now she's screaming about everything, and she did say something though, and I don't know what happened to her, but she did say something where she said that the men in Congress, GOP men in Congress, are weak. And this is something my husband has said for a while, for probably about 10 years now, that it's the women, if the Republicans had more women in Congress, they would get far more done and they wouldn't constantly be trying to kick the football. And then they're shocked when Lucy pulls it away, like over and over and over again. Do you at least agree with that assessment that the men in the Republican Party, at least for me, I agree with it. They just don't seem to be fighters. It's really the women who are the fighters. Now, that's starting to change under Trump's second term. I think he's showing them how to fight and that it's okay. But there's still a large contingent that just wants to go along to get along.
I don't think that's gender specific. I do think that there are elements of the Republican Party, Democrat too, that only want to go along to get along. But that's what's gotten into the crisis we have today, is too much of that. And we haven't put the people first. And we do have, I mean, look at Byron Donalds and Tim Burchett, Eli Crane, and, you know, Congressman Luttrell. I mean, we do have fighters. We do have men that are fighting too. But it's just, you see this, and you see it just across the board where it's almost like uniparty, and it's like, no, people want us to push back. There's a reason why we have universities in South Carolina that have 15 genders on a form, and male and female aren't two of the options, is because we just let this kind of thing fester. There's a reason why Republicans and Democrats got us into $37 trillion of debt and counting, because they both voted for it. You know, so it's like, we can't, sometimes you can't point the finger. This is a lot of people, a lot of the time.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But I always say it's one of the reasons I am not a registered Republican, is because I don't think they've ever come to show up to actually win. They will snatch defeat from the jaws of victory at every turn, which is why with the shutdown, I'm actually impressed that the Republicans have hung together, they have stuck together, and they are not giving in. And this really is being hung around Chuck Schumer's neck. This is really the Schumer shutdown. And Republicans were actually successful, and I cannot remember the last time Republicans were successful at something like this. They always get stuck with the shutdown, whether it's their fault or not. What's different this time around?
We are 100% unified on this right now. We all understand what's at stake here. And we don't have the capacity to give up, because this is not – the people voted for us to stand strong against the left's craziness, the left's lunacy, against what Chuck Schumer is doing. He's only doing this because he's afraid of a former bartender from the Bronx. He's afraid of AOC that will run against him in 28 in that Senate seat. He's going to lose either way. And so he's still doing this. He's still placating to the far left fringes of his party, which is now really the mainstream Democrat Party, have all these lunatic ideas. But that's who they are trying to market to. And it's not a winning strategy. And our troops and people on WIC or SNAP, they're vulnerable. The most vulnerable families are the most vulnerable with the Schumer shutdown. I got to tell you, in purple places, I think they put New Jersey into play, more into play than it ever has been. And I think Democrats are going to lose a lot next year because of it.
Can we talk about a little bit about New Jersey, if you don't
Let's
mind?
Talk about it.
Yeah. So Virginia and New Jersey have off-season elections, and they're often considered bellwethers for the midterms. And New Jersey usually votes the opposite of whatever who happens to be in office. So if there's a Republican office, they're gonna vote Democrat. But they rarely vote for the same party three cycles in a row. So this year is going to be an anomaly, no matter which way it goes. Is New Jersey being here, it does feel different. It does feel like Chitterelli is going to win this. Jack's going to win this. That's how it feels. Now, it may not be that way. It seems to me as if the Republican Party has decided to just not throw New Jersey away this election cycle. He could have used the help from the RNC last time around, but this time is different. Why is it that the Republican Party, the national, it seems to be, to be fired up about New Jersey this year? And oddly, not as much about Virginia.
Well, we have a huge opportunity here. And I do believe that there are people that are disenfranchised or feel disaffected by the Democrat Party. We have independents that aren't going to vote for the Democrat nominee, that this is an opportunity. And I think the president and the party wants people to know that we haven't forgotten you, that we are still here, and that we will support you and we can represent you. And so we'll see how it turns out. I'm praying for a big win in both states. You know, Virginia being very much a swing state will be a bellwether for next year. And I think it's dire straits for Spanberger. If you saw that debate, too, it was pretty terrible.
The oddest thing is that, you know, Spanberger grew up in New Jersey. And Mikey Sherrill grew
up in Newark, by the way. So I have Jersey roots.
but you escaped. You got out. So she grew up in New Jersey. And now she's running in Virginia. And Mikey Sherrill grew up in Virginia and is running in New Jersey.
Oh, interesting.
Which is so weird. And they were roommates when they were freshmen in Congress.
Oh, that's so weird.
Right?
That's interesting.
It's somewhat creepy. Now, the Democrats though are sending a bunch of different big names to stump for in Virginia, right? In New Jersey for Mikey Sherrill. They have a bunch of that are going to be coming up here that are going to be going throughout the state to stump for Mikey Sherrill. Are Republicans doing that for Jack at all that you know of?
I haven't heard, but we saw this playbook before in 2024. Kamala Harris trotted out the biggest names known in the world, and she still lost. And it's really the only endorsement that I think really matters in these kinds of things is Donald Trump. He moves the most people at the most critical time. He does that. And other than that, it's making sure that your message is out there and getting out the vote, knocking on doors, making sure people turn out. If they're for you, they got to go vote. I think they're making a big mistake. They're doing the same thing they've always done, and it didn't work last year. I don't think it'll work this year.
Yeah, they've got Mark Kelly and Gabby Giffords coming up Saturday. Mm-hmm. Josh Shapiro, which is odd since he wasn't good enough.
Does New Jersey know who those people are, though? Like, does Jersey even know who Mark Kelly is from Arizona?
That's a good point. That's an excellent point. I think they know who who Josh Shapiro is because he's right next door. Mm-hmm. But that's a fantastic point. But, you know, it's funny. You talk about Kamala Harris. Have you noticed that it's now okay on the Democrat side to criticize some of the DEI hires like Kamala Harris and KJP? Like now all of a sudden they're fair game. Like they were sent from the heavens above and you couldn't touch them when they were relevant because then you were a misogynist, you were racist, you were homophobic, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Now they're starting to criticize them. I'm kind of surprised at that. Is there a shift on the Democrat side?
Well, even in Kamala's book, right, she's trying to rewrite history and say that she didn't try to dismantle Title IX, that she doesn't want men in women's sports. And we all know how that turned out for them. And the sooner they get to normal, the sooner they'll give Republicans a run for their money. But they are still far, far away from normal because they still have lunatics that are burning cities down, assaulting police officers, ICE officers, law enforcement. They got a long way to go, I think, to change the direction they were headed in.
Yeah, they do have to turn the ship around, but it's like turning around the Titanic. I don't know if they're going to be able to do it quickly before they wind up being the Democratic Communist Party of America. Not social. They're going to blow right through socialism and go right to communism.
They're already there. Mamdani, they're already there. I mean,
that's very true. And they're embracing it. Today is a big day in Washington, D.C. For as much as I can't stand the environment there, today would have been Charlie Kirk's 32nd birthday. And President Trump is going to be honoring him posthumously with the Presidential Medal of Freedom. And, you know, to me, this is something that I think I just think that this is fantastic. I just want to talk to you about, like, the message that this sends. And does it make any kind of an impact on those on the left?
Well, Charlie Kirk was murdered so the church could live on. He was such a man of faith and his belief in Jesus Christ and spreading his message of faith to younger generations in the U.S. and around the world. Such an inspiration. This is huge. And we saw the way the left reacted in the wake of his murder, just nasty behavior towards conservatives celebrating the assassination. But what he did, and in his death, in the wake of his death, the millions of people, not just young people, that he has inspired to find their faith, to go back to church. Because I do believe the only way we can save our country's future and the world, quite frankly, is ensuring that we have a faith in Jesus Christ, that that brings to all of us something bigger than ourselves and gives us purpose in life and helps us navigate challenges. That's what can bring the community together, the country together. And he did that, and he inspired that, and he has inspired so many millions more in the wake of his passing than I think he could have ever, any one of us could ever, ever imagined. And I'm even seeing it in my, in family members who, and friends who are like, can I go to church with you this weekend? Yes. Come to church with me. And I'm bringing everybody that I can.
I just love it. I hope it lasts. Seeing these young people, you know, with the revivals and everything. And I do believe that things are cyclical. And I do believe we've gone so far to the left that it's only natural that we start to swing back to the right. And I think you're right. Donald Trump is really the catalyst for that. And of course, Charlie Kirk. Congressman Nancy Mace, thank you for joining me. Best of luck in your pursuit of the governorship of South Carolina. I have no doubt that we'll have you back and we'll be calling you governor. So thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you.
I'm Mary Walter. More coming up on The Brian Kilmeade Show.
You're with Brian Kilmeade. He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
I'm Mary Walter in for Brian Kilmeade. Coming up, some good news for President Trump and his job approval. We've got that coming up. We also have Joe Biden and Antony Blinken kind of riding or trying, attempting to ride President Trump's coattails on the peace agreement in the Middle East. And if you want to travel to Europe, it's going to be different for you. We'll tell you how coming up on The Brian Kilmeade Show. Oh, I got another minute. Oh, look at that. I have another minute. I didn't even realize that. Okay, so also, we've got Mamdani. I want to talk about him and also Mikey Sherrill, because it seems Democrats have a little bit of a problem with foreign donations in their campaign coffers. And it's interesting how that seems to happen with alarming regularity with the Democrats. A lot of foreigners want to give them money, and we should probably question why they want to do that, right? Why do so many foreigners want to give Democrats money to help them get elected? That's not legal, and they always wind up having to give it back. It's interesting. Sorry. Oops, my bad. All right, more coming up on The Brian Kilmeade Show.
Information you want, truth you demand. This is The Brian Kilmeade Show.
I believe it's Tuesday night for Charlie Kirk, a friend of mine, a friend of all of ours, a friend of a lot of the people right here. And we're giving him the Presidential Medal of Freedom, which is the highest honor you get outside of the Congressional Medal of Honor. They're going to have a great celebration at the White House, in the East Room of the White House.
You know what's really sad is it's probably just going to anger the Democrats, which, yes, I do love angering them, because it's funny because they take the bait every time and you just laugh at them. Like the whole sombrero thing was really dumb. It was kind of stupid, but because of their reaction, it became hilarious. If they had ignored it, everybody would have been like, oh, it was kind of a dud, it's kind of dumb. But because they didn't ignore it, hilarious. I think this is wonderful. I think Democrats are making a grave mistake if they mock this ceremony for Charlie Kirk, or they somehow denigrate it in any way, because especially there are especially a lot of young people in this country and around the world who mourn the passing, the assassination of Charlie Kirk. And they may not, they may never have met him. He may never have been on their campus, but they watched his videos and they were well aware of who Charlie is. And I mean, I watch his videos all the time. I thought he was so smart. My goodness. He could quote chapter and verse for scripture, for the Bible, and he could tell you like which amendment and article of the Constitution and then quote it verbatim. I mean, the brain, just so smart. And I love that he was very respectful when he would engage people. And I think he really taught us how to do that. And I would watch his videos and, you know, learn. I respected the way he did it. And I think a lot of young people did as well. So I don't know. I think that they're going to make a very grave mistake and in doing that. And they've already, with their initial reaction to the assassination of Charlie, and just the fact that it happened in and of itself, I think drove a lot of especially young people, and you know what, some of their parents as well, because I saw that I saw videos, and I'm sure you saw them as well, of moms and dads who were getting online and they're, you know, doing a video like, hey, you know, my son, I saw my son was crying and I couldn't understand, you know, why. And he told me about Charlie, but he didn't know Charlie. And my daughter is so upset. And these kids were all in their teens and 20s. And the parents then went and looked at Charlie's videos. And you saw a lot of conversions, a lot of people saying that, you know, like, I cannot believe the way the Democrats responded to this. I'm switching parties. You saw that happen. And I think that that was Charlie's purpose in life. So good on Donald Trump, good on the White House for giving him this Presidential Medal of Freedom on what would have been his 32nd birthday. Gosh, can you imagine? So young, just so young. Two little kids. It's very, very sad. Look, we got a caller. Let's go to Trish in Florida. Trish, welcome. You're on the Brian Kilmeade Show. Hi.
Hi, Mary. I love it when you substitute because you are just amazing. And I just love your point of view. And I love the way you talk about the issues of the day.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Thank you.
You're welcome. I wanted to just make a very brief comment about the way the media has reacted this morning and yesterday. With all of the great things that have happened, a lot of what we're hearing and a lot of what the public seems to believe is that we're waiting for the other shoe to drop. Do you know what I'm saying? There's a lot of negativity out there, and I see it all over the news media. I listen to both sides. I'm a very fair-minded person, but I think that what has transpired here is historic. I'm of an age where I remember back in the Reagan days where peace through strength was a real thing. And the wall came down in Germany, and we stopped the Cold War. That is something that will resonate with me for the rest of my life. And I think that this is kind of equal to that if it can be maintained. And I only think that Donald Trump can go forward from here. And I wish that people would open their eyes, their minds, and their hearts and realize how immense this peace can be, is, and will be.
I hope so. I will say that I have full faith in Donald Trump as a man, his ability to make something like this happen. 7 prior peace deals. Why would the 8th, you know, be any different? The one thing, though, is I don't trust Hamas. I just don't trust them. They signed the papers, but now they're saying, well, we want to be part of the governing of Gaza. And they're like, no, the papers you signed said you can't do that. I don't know how we disarm them. I don't know how we get rid of all of those tunnels that they have dug all over the place. They're the only ones who know where all of that is. And I don't know how we do that, because, you know, Israel's pulling back to a certain line. Once Gazans, Palestinians move back in there, you're done. How do you get in there to get rid of all those tunnels and look for weapons and things like that? You can't.
Well, maybe we empower the Palestinians to do that.
Well, you know what? They just had an execution. You're seeing it online a couple hours after they signed the peace deal. They just executed a bunch of people.
Yeah, I know. But I think that there's a faction that does not want this peace to end. And I know that there are a lot of people who want it to last. So I think that there's going to be it's kind of a little bit of a mini uprising within that faction to stop this where before it starts. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I hope so. We hope for the same thing in Iran, right? When they deposed the Shah, we hope for that as well there. And it didn't happen. They've tried on numerous occasions, but when the populace doesn't have arms, when they've been disarmed, and you have a religious zealotry that governs the country, just like you do with Hamas. Hamas's sole existence, their sole reason for living, is to destroy Israel and the United States. And that's what they teach their children. That's what their kids are indoctrinated in school. Their classrooms their maps don't show Israel on the map. It's all Palestine. That's my one fear with this whole thing. Trish, thank you for the conversation. Have a wonderful day. And thank you for listening to the Brian Kilmeade Show. I'm not saying that Donald Trump, I am rejoicing. I am happy for this. I'm happy for the Israeli people. I had been in Israel in August, and it was, people love Trump. All I'm going to say is people love Trump there. They when they saw Americans, because there weren't a lot of people there at all, because everyone's so afraid to go. It was so safe. I can't stress how safe it was to go there. We walking around and, people out and about and hi, how you doing? It was great. And As I said, I felt safe. But what really came across is when people found out when you were American, they give you the thumbs up and they're like, Trump, they love him. The populace loves him. And, I got to ask the president of Israel, President Herzog. We met with him one-on-one in a group setting, but he answered our questions. We got to Q&A with him. And I asked him, I said, there are points in history, for instance, the falling of the Berlin Wall, where you had the right people, Reagan, Thatcher, John Paul II, you had the right people in place at the right time to accomplish something, a big thing that had been tried before, and it didn't work in Gorbachev. And those people were in the right place at the right time. I said, do you feel that given, the Abraham Accords and a more moderate government now in Saudi, and Donald Trump back in the White House and Bibi Netanyahu back as prime minister, are these the right people in place at the right time to finally bring peace to the Middle East? And I said, you've got the Trump with all of these other peace accords. And he looked at me and he said, bless you for asking that question. He said, yes, absolutely. These are the right people at the right time. And he was right. So was I, but I'm going to give him full credit. Sometimes that happens, but I think there's a wild card in this whole thing, and that is Hamas. They may sign the papers. They got their fighters back. That's what they want. I don't know if they abide by the agreement. And then, does Israel just go in and flatten it? Because that's what they were told is going to happen. And the other countries in the area, the other Muslim countries, said, we're not going to save you. You're done. So we'll see what happens there. All right, we're not done here. We've got a little bit more coming up on The Brian Kilmeade Show.
This is The Brian Kilmeade Show. From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
We believe in public safety that actually delivers safety and justice. We can make this a city where no one is afraid to walk the streets or take the subway. A city where our police officers focus on serious crimes and it is mental health professionals that address the mental health crisis.
Yeah, that's Zoran Mamdani, the next mayor of the city of New York, which is sad because he's going to win. And don't worry about it. Listen, we do have a mental health crisis. I agree with him on that. But I also think that there's a policing and safety crisis in New York. I had to go into the city 2 weeks after I came home from Israel. I felt safer in Israel than I did in Manhattan. But don't worry. We're going to get rid of the cops because he thinks that, what did he say? Violence is a social construct. And I'm like, no, I don't think that's true. But he wants to, jails. No jails. We're not going to have jails. We're not going to have, because you don't know these people's backstories. Maybe they've had a hard life. Like, okay, well, after they stabbed me, now I've got a hard life. So it's going to be a mess. It's going to be a huge mess. And if they vote for it, they deserve it. But unfortunately, those who can afford to get out are all going to go to New Jersey and Pennsylvania and the Carolinas and just keep voting blue and just keep spreading the disease that is the Democrat Socialist Communist Party. Let's go to Sandra in New Jersey, listening on WABC. Sandra, welcome to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Hi.
Thank you, Mary. I welcome you. I love when you sub.
Thank you.
The show is so great. You're welcome. You know, these two elections, the one in New Jersey and the one in New York, really weigh heavy on my heart. They both do. If Jack Ciattarelli does not win this election, I'm going to be very sad, and I think a lot of people are going to be very sad, because he really, truly, truly will turn the state around in the right way. So I just hope that happens. And with Mandani, I wanted to ask you, they said, I read that he took $13,000 worth of money from countries outside of the United States for his campaign. I think like 170 out of 54,000, which is not a lot if you compare it to how much he did get the correct way, but still, when you knowingly violate that law, you are up for a hefty fine, sometimes even jail time. So I just wanted to know your opinion on that. Probably nothing's going to happen. That's my guess.
But yeah, Mikey Sherrill has the same problem in New Jersey, getting donations from someone who's connected to the CCP. You know, George Santos goes to jail. But he did. Mm-hmm. I mean, there was more to him than just that. But right. It's different with a capital D when they do it. It's like, oh, sorry, didn't mean to. Absolutely. We'll send it back. You know, like, oh, yeah. So sorry. They're sorry they got caught. That's the problem.
So not fair. So not fair.
It's not.
Not fair.
It's not. But we have allowed this to perpetuate. And I blame the Republicans for that. Republicans have allowed this to perpetuate. And they're like, well, you know, they amended their filing. Oh, they returned the money. Da-da. You're supposed to police it as it comes in. Yes, if you return the money, that's part of it. You can return the money. That's great. But the way the Democrats do their money and the way they move it from organization to organization to organization. So it's like, I don't want to say laundered, but it's moved through so many that it makes it very, very difficult to find, like Antifa, which doesn't exist. But if they did exist, finding out where all of the, you know, the bulletproof vests are coming from and where all the helmets are coming from and where all of the signs that look exactly alike are coming from, all of that, they move it through so many different groups that it's almost impossible to follow. And I have to give them credit for that. They play the game better than the Republicans, and the Republicans have allowed that to prosper on that side. And this is where I go back to Marjorie Taylor Greene, and I agree with her that there are a lot of very weak men in the Republican Party who have allowed this to happen over the decades.
We have to do better.
We do. We need more women in the RNC, in the GOP, in my humble opinion. Sandra, thank you so much for joining me. Have a great day. Thank you for listening to The Brian Kilmeade Show. Very quickly, in North Carolina, Alton, you're on The Brian Kilmeade Show. Hi.
How's it going today?
Doing good, thanks. Go ahead.
No, I was just listening to about Zohran Mamdani. You know, I mean, I'm a Republican, but I just feel like sometimes we have to let these states or just these people in these parties, you know, they need to live what these people are preaching. You know, I mean, since everything's happening, Trump's won the presidency. I mean, a lot of people are starting to come back around to common sense. You know, but these other people that are pushing this socialist stuff, they just need to live through it for a little while, and then, you know, hopefully they'll come back to our side.
I've always said that I would love to have a reality show, and I would donate to help make this happen. I don't have a lot of money because I work in radio, but I would still donate to make this happen. A reality show where they take these little leftists, these little soy boys and these very manly women, and they take them to a socialist country. You want to be about Gaza? You think Gaza's all love and Israel's nothing? We're going to put you in Israel. You could check it out. And then we're going to put you in Gaza, and we'll come back and get you in a week. And just see how they do. Let's send them to Cuba, Venezuela. Let's take them to some of these countries because they want pure socialism. They don't want a hybrid. So we don't take them to Sweden or the Netherlands, any of those countries. We take them to some pure, flat-out socialist, communist countries and leave them there and see what happens. I think it would be a great learning experience. And I think you're right. Well, they have to experience it because they don't know history because they're dumb.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, Alton, thank you so much. I appreciate you joining me on the Brian Kilmeade Show. Yes, I am all down for that. So Mom Downey took in, our caller was correct, about 13,000 in potentially illegal foreign donations. And this is according to the New York Post. At least 170 of the nearly 54,000 contributions that to his campaign came from donors with addresses outside the United States. Only U.S. citizens or permanent legal residents are allowed to contribute to political campaigns and to PACs under federal, state, and city law. And candidates are expected to return any of the illegal donations. Violators who knowingly accept foreign donations could face hefty fines and imprisonment. Here's the thing. Prove they knew that it was wrong. Prove it. You can't. And that's why they throw their hands up and they go, I'm so sorry. I didn't know. And then they get away with it. It's the way it is. So we'll see what happens there. It's out in the New York Post. Will anything happen? I don't know. Now, lastly, they are so childish and petty. They really, truly are. And this is why I think they're miserable. They're just inherently miserable people, the left. Look at the cover of Time. It's all over the internet. And it's a picture of Trump. And it is a horrendous picture. It looks terrible. He kind of looks bald. You can see all the folds in his neck he's got going on there. And it was apparently taken by a man who's the chief photographer for the AP in Washington, who was banned from the Oval Office along with some other reporters and photographers. So this is just a revenge shot, and Time is running with it because they're going to put him on the cover, but they're going to make him pay for it, right? So petty. They're just miserable people. Don't be miserable. I'm Mary Walter. You're listening to The Brian Kilmeade Show.